This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy's special edition, Catwoman Hunted. My fanboy special edition Catwoman Hunted. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt. And this is the Animation Brain Trust. We're talking about Catwoman Hunted, the Paul number
44th installment in the DC Universe Animated Original Movies, or DCU AOM line.
Did you guys know that according to Wikipedia, they break them up into different categories like DCAMU or Tomorrowverse for the new films that are set in the Man of Tomorrow world.
Oh, do they do that now? Okay.
Well, that's the category in Wikipedia.
Well, that's an interesting wrinkle because I guess we'll be talking about some upcoming things
Right. Where
that branching gets interesting.
Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. We'll be spoiling Catwoman Hunted as we discuss it. This one was described on the back of the box as the all-new anime-style DC movie,
and
such, directed not by one of the normal directors. This one's directed by Shinsuke Terasawa.
Shinsuke Terasawa.
Not close. Yeah. Not even close. With a script by Greg Weisman.
Mm-hmm. Long stay of animation in general.
Right.
Worked on Gargoyles. Not the original Batman the Animated Series, but like every Batman thing since then. So like the Batman...
Incredible
Brave and the
stuff.
Bold.
Young Justice, Spectacular Spider-Man, Star Wars Rebels, Gargoyles. This is guys, I mean, he's sort of a modern day one of the big names in animation, and he's the writer on this film. Starring Stephanie Beatrice as Batwoman, Lauren Cohn as Julia Pennyworth, Elizabeth Giles as the star, Catwoman, Kelly Hugh as Cheshire, and all a bunch of other people we'll talk about in a minute.
I have a proposal before any of us... Wait, hang on. I have a proposal first before we say a one word about how we felt about this movie, because I didn't say a word. I just groaned. I'm going to say, if we all give this a one or lower in the ratings, I think we cancel the Animated Brain Trust. I think we just disband it or we're done with it. It's over.
If you want to quit, that's your business.
That's not... That's your business, yeah.
All right. Proposal rejected.
We're pretty strict about not talking about the review beforehand, not talking about the film, not knowing.
Sort of an unspoken thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how these guys feel. I feel like this is a standalone film. It doesn't take place in any of the shared universe films. It's a total film.
Right.
I thought this was an exceedingly strange movie. Very weird. There was a lot of weird choices, performances.
I think that's a tall ask after Batman Ninja or Ninja Batman.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing they've done.
Yes. Oh, no. I don't think this is the weirdest thing they've done, but I thought this was very strange.
This is in the upper third of weird things that they've done. Yeah. It has a different sensibility than a lot of the other films.
It was... So, First, I mean, there were things that did I liked. There were things that did I didn't like. There were choices that were strange. There was performances I liked, performances I didn't like. It was sort of, for me, all over the map where I couldn't figure out, do I like this? Do I hate this? Do I like this? Do I hate this? And I think I hate it. It was very strange. At the end of the day, I think I didn't like it, but I appreciate that they went out and did something unusual as a tie
did something
to Batman,
different.
The Batman film coming out. And it's a Batman world film, not starring Batman. Stars Catwoman and Batwoman, and it takes place all across the globe.
I was surprised that we didn't see Batman at all.
I was a little surprised.
I was expecting that we'd maybe at least get a cameo, and we did not.
I hated this. Just wanted it to... there was a moment in the beginning where she was in the Golden Age Catwoman suit that I was like, oh, that's nice.
That was Bronze Age,
Bronze Age Catwoman suit, sorry. That's fine. I appreciated that, and then just from that point on,
So the whole story is Catwoman, this takes place in Russia, and Spain, and China, and France, and England, it's all over the place. In Spain, she goes to rob this party, turns out it's Leviathan's party, they end up getting entangled in that, she gets recruited forcibly by King Faraday and
Interpol.
Julia Pennyworth, Interpol agents, with her handler Batwoman to stop Leviathan. And so that ends up taking place in several places on the globe. And so it's a globe-trotting international mystery. I really, really liked the opening credit sequence that was very Darwin Cook-inspired. And she's wearing the Darwin Cook suit throughout the whole thing. So there's clearly that influence.
The best Catwoman costume.
It's an awesome costume. The opening was super cool. It had a jazzy score. I was like, all right, this is going to be fun. And then...
okay.
That was sort of the high point for me.
That was the high point for you? Okay.
There were some other things that I thought were okay, but that was the high point. I was like, oh, this is over right now. This would be pretty cool. I don't know.
Let me touch on that. Let me touch on that opening. Okay. It's interesting that Shinsuke Terasawa, who was the director for this, hasn't directed a whole bunch of stuff, but has been a key animator on oodles of classic anime, I would say. Mm-hmm. He did some Gundam stuff, like OG, like Char's Counterattack Gundam stuff, if you into anime. The thing I think that is most relevant to his work here is that he did a bunch of the Lupin the Third movies, which are globe-trotting spy, that's a spy character.
Right, based on...
Lupin the Third, that are goofy and, Arsene Lupin, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of those movies and TV series and going back to like the 70s and Monkey Punch manga and stuff. Anyways, the intro, I felt, it's interesting you say Darwin Cook inspired. To me, I felt like that was kind of a shameless riff on the intro to Cowboy Bebop, which has a really jazzy, brassy, the tune is Tank.
But like, hey, let's go.
This felt like hey, do something like Tank, and then somebody went off and then composed something that was like Tank, and then let's do a stylish, sexy, opening, and I think it's a cool opening. We haven't really seen anything like that in these DC animated movies, but if you've seen anime and if you've seen Cowboy Bebop, this feels very much of a style, and so I think that was very much what they were going for. And I think throughout there's some cool jazzy music. Nothing like, oh, I got to go out and get that score. But like, I see what they're doing and it adds a cool flavor
that
to this.
That was a note I had
sets
that
it apart.
I thought was really interesting. The score was really distinctive. And when have we ever, in the history of this series of podcasts, ever talked about the music or the score in one of these movies?
Yeah, right. I'll give it that for all my criticisms.
I'm not saying it was great, but I'm saying score. It was
there's a saxophone.
It was a fun little jazzy score that was sometimes out of place, but I was like, you know what?
Yes.
I couldn't, with a gun to my head and all of my loved ones, I couldn't tell you what any of these other movies had score-wise. So, you know what? Kudos.
Well, I think I can tell you because at some point they kind of, I don't know if they ran out of the jazzy music, but like specifically the bit with Cheetah, towards the end, that boss fight, they go into more of their like tried and true from the vault DC animated music that's just bombastic superhero.
Yeah, I mean, other than the theme could be anything. Or the theme from Batman, I couldn't tell you any of the, you know, I couldn't hum any of the music. Not that I could hum this, but it was like kind of fun.
This just has like a fun, upbeat, you know, thing about it. One thing I would say that I really liked, I was not familiar with Elizabeth Giles going into this. Mm-hmm. She's a great voice actress.
Yes.
Now, they kind of go full bore XXX bedroom voice for every piece of dialogue that Catwoman has.
Everything she says is a sexual innuendo. Sometimes.
Everything
she was
is sexy.
So annoying. How did any, like, I could, the other characters were clearly like off put by her, but it just reached a point where I'm just like, oh my, like, I just stop talking. Everything you're saying is annoying and stupid and not like relevant. The dialogue.
Like, there's only one level to what she's doing. Right. But I think that's a directorial choice.
Yeah.
And she does it very well.
Yeah, I thought she was
but
good.
But yes, it does. Yeah. It can be a lot. But I think, like, if they'd asked her to do something more nuanced, I think she probably could have done it. It's just they weren't going for it. They were going very over the top with this. And Catwoman is very confident, is very competent in this movie. I think it's a great take on Catwoman. But there aren't really a lot of moments where she's calculating or vulnerable. It's always...
She's always a step ahead and and is being sexy while doing it. Which I don't have a problem with.
It was breathy, just
a, it was a choice. I actually thought she was really great. I really like Stephanie Beatriz. I thought she was a terrible choice for Batwoman.
I was actually disappointed. I was really looking forward to her in this role. I thought it was a really interesting choice for her. I think she has a great voice for this kind of work, and I thought it fell very flat.
She's a very good voice actress. She was in Encanto.
Encanto, she's really good.
Her run on BoJack Horseman was excellent as well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think her voice fit. I think one of the big problems was a lot of the voices didn't fit the animation. And I don't mean like they didn't match. I mean, it just the voices coming out of the characters didn't fit how they were drawn.
I thought the two agents, the King Faraday and Julia Pennyworth, were the worst offenders.
Yeah, that was, those are both like bad. Very...
It's Frakes!
It was like they were yelling Frakes all the time.
Yes. I put it down to whoever did the voice directing on this. Because I think they're all great actors.
Oh, obviously, yeah. But Paul, you're much more... I mean, I've hardly watched any anime in my entire life.
Mm.
Was this enough anime? Like, it almost felt like it was in between. Like, it wasn't quite full anime.
It is.
And it wasn't.
Yeah. It's not as fluid. Like, aside from the god awful 3D CG Lupin the Third movie they did recently, the hand drawn Lupin stuff it's so fluid and dynamic, and it would have been great to see that. But instead, we get the same old CG cars racing around. I don't know why they keep writing.
Every episode,
car chases
every
and vehicle stuff into every single one of these because
it looks terrible.
It just looks bad.
There was one cool shot where the van gets stuck in the alley and it's like pitch black on the top and bottom of the frame. I thought that actually looked kind of cool, but it also was just like the incompetence of all the henchmen and bad guys was particularly egregious in this. And it was just a lot of like they were exchanging quips during a high speed chase. In a way that I was like, you're trying to do James Bond, but you're taking like 2.5 minutes for a thing that I would have been distracted and crashed my car if I'd tried to do at this speed.
This was clearly a tonal decision. And so
broad.
It was very broad across the board. Like, everything was broad.
Yeah, but I think part of it is, I would, given the option, I would watch this with, quote unquote, the original Japanese language track. Because I feel like that's where, I don't know... That puts me in the mindset of watching an anime,
right?
Where a lot of times it's very heightened and it's very broad. And sometimes watching the English dub of an anime, there are very good ones. But like sometimes when you watch that, there's a disconnect there between the tone, the just how heightened and broad it is, and then just hearing it spoken in a language that I speak every day. It's a difficult thing to describe, but it felt like there was a lot of disconnect here between various elements of this
performances didn't match animation in terms of people would
stand and it's not just
stiffly.
Lip-flap stuff.
No, people would stand very stiffly, and they would be overly talking, overly acting, and it was just like,
right,
what is happening? And it just felt like everything was turned to 11 because that's what they felt like anime was, and I mean, I don't know if that's why they did it, but that was the feeling I got watching it. There was a couple of interesting visual things that happened. You know, the Eiffel Tower scene when, you know, all the ninjas show up. Like, there was some cool camera movements and things, and I was like, oh, that's fun.
That was a good set piece, yeah.
So there's a couple of bits where they really did some interesting visual flourishes, but it just was so bogged down by everything else. I mean, Black Mask was over the top, played by the great Jonathan Banks. Like, it was just everything was...
Probably my favorite performance in the movie.
I think Jonathan Banks was having fun. I think...
Yeah, I'm sure they were all having fun, yeah.
Yeah, but I think for the Stephanie Beatrice thing, I think is... So in Encanto, where she's playing a teenager... Teenager, or is she like in her 20s? Anyway, a young person. Say, yeah. Like, it's more of her normal, quote-unquote, bubbly speaking voice.
Yes.
Whereas Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she's putting on a voice, and that's what she's doing here for Batwoman. And I don't know if that was like a character direction that they talked about, but like she's putting on a tough voice.
Yeah, it didn't work.
And there's a very particular scene with her and Catwoman involving a bath towel. And that's where they kind of lost me, because I don't think Batwoman is so incompetent as to fall for the wiles of Selina coming on to her, however beautiful she is,
right,
and going to fall for that because Catwoman was trying to get her phone and basically seducing her and like takes her wig and mask off. And
right. She's not one of the sidekicks.
And she's, you know, former military.
Yeah.
But also,
you know,
like,
Kate is, and...
Also,
I don't
Selina's
see that.
Very annoying, so, like, why would I say this with all the love in the world to the theater kids that I grew up with, and I consider myself a theater kid myself, but she was just, like, she was the theater kid in high school that is told to be, like, play sexy, and it's like, well, you're 15, you don't know how, like, and it's just bad and awkward and it's dumb, and the things you say are not sexy, they're stupid, and the whole thing just fell completely flat for me.
If you were in a situation where you were with friends and then you were introducing this new friend to them, it's like she's got this porn voice.
Yeah, where she's just like, oh, these are your new friends? Me, yeah, I guess it's time to make them part of the pride. I'm just like, shut up! Stop with the cat
like
shit! I like cats! I have published scientific papers on various species of cats. I'm a cat guy, and I wanted her to shut the hell up about these cats. Okay, I liked the throwbacky costume at the masquerade, and I don't know, they really did cheat a pretty dirty on those rebar. I know rebar's a nice fanboy thing, so that I noticed that.
I wasn't expecting, I was actually, when they went to go and look, give it a further, I was expecting her not to be there. Like, she fell onto the rebar,
right,
but then, like, they cut away. I thought they were going to go and, like, oh, she got away. I wasn't expecting, because in the beginning, in that party scene, there's this weird moment where Catwoman reveals herself and everybody starts pulling out guns and stuff and like shooting wildly into the crowd. Yeah. But you don't see anybody falling over.
No, no
like
one gets hit. No one gets hit.
Yeah. It definitely was like, that's a choice. Okay. Yeah. And that set up my expectations for the rest of the thing. And then, so it was weird when there was a moment when Catwoman, I think, like cuts one of the ninjas or something with her blade and you actually see blood. It was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that, because the stakes that you set up with that costume party is that you can just spray bullets and people just dodge them and nobody, you know, gets hurt.
I thought the final fight scene between her and Cheetah was okay, but I was so over it. But cause it felt like the third, you know, it was Return of the King vibes of just like, seriously, we have to like, why isn't this movie over?
It's structured in a very odd way.
Yeah, it felt like the where they have to battle all the monster. You know, there's like a scene where all the crime bosses are like throwing out demons and kaiju and Bruno Mannheim and Intergang is putting on like crazy apocalypse mecha suits, which I actually thought that was kind of cool. And I was like, well, this feels climactic. And then there were like three more major set pieces after that.
I had the weird sense that, like, was this originally, like, something that was, like, episodes? Because it has that kind of...
It was very episodic.
...rise and fall to it. those confrontations you were talking about would have been one episode, and then the next thing would be, oh, and then we've still got to deal with Cheetah and all that. So
also, the way this is not referring to the cut in terms of the video editing, but the cut on that emerald is nonsense. And it's not cut like an actual emerald. It's cut more like an opal, because an opal is an amorphous silicate. It doesn't have facets. And so it wasn't even like that. Even the emerald annoyed me. I'm just annoyed.
Ryan, I thought about you in the monster fight scene where Neferata is flying and they're hanging on her, and they're talking about how they're all weighing her down because they're all holding onto her feet, and she's just sort of like hanging there in the air, and her wings aren't actually doing anything at one point.
I mean, that stuff doesn't bother me, because in the word, you know, to pronounce it the way Ron Richards does, Archangel kind of flies like that, and it's fine. But like, the thing that annoyed me was they were descending very, very slowly in a way where it's like, they're like, we got to get something to break our fall. Like, I don't know what the soft touch of how you're about to be dropped down to the floor. Like, and then they climbed on top of her and purposefully pushed her into a dive to make them fall
faster. She was also concerned about the weight and falling and hurting herself. Like, if you're in control, why don't you just lower yourself and they'll hop off of you and then you fly away?
Batwoman and Catwoman, two characters who seem... demonstrate routinely throughout the course of this movie that when falling, they have many avenues for which they can grapple and they can float and they can flip around. It's just
very, very bizarre about this whole production is that it's made by people who clearly know what they're doing.
Yes, there are deep DC cuts. There was like a lot of really, like, they clearly know DC stuff well.
No, but I mean, like, Greg Weisman, who has written tons of legitimately terrific shows, wrote this.
I'm a big Young Justice fan.
I'm a huge Young Justice fan, huge Spectacular Spider-Man fan. I think it's the best Spider-Man cartoon. I haven't seen any of the director's work, but Paul's seen it and says it's good.
Well, I've seen things he's animated, not things that he's been directly in charge of, I don't think.
But clearly at some point, whether it was the producers or whoever, said this is what we're going to go for here, is this sort of hybrid-y anime tone. I mean, it's a discussion that you have the meetings. This is how the movie's going to play out, and this is what it's going to be like. And so clearly they chose this, and I don't think it worked.
I really liked the character designs. I didn't like the animation, like the actual movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it was clumsy or anything, but it wasn't as dynamic as it could have been.
Right.
But I think the Catwoman design, even the Batwoman design, I think those are, for the tone that they're going for, I think the casting choices are all good. It's just for some, it's like you have all the ingredients, but just for some reason, they don't coalesce in the right way.
Right.
I was very much looking forward to this, and I did have fun with it. But yeah, it does it's odd choices in places. The bathtub thing was so odd to me, and it was it just felt out of character. It's like, let's have characters do something that you want them to do for the script, but they're not things that the characters would actually do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind Catwoman trying to seduce Batwoman to get something from her. That makes sense.
Sure. I don't mind fan service either, but also just, it doesn't make sense for, especially for that character. Like, I think of Batwoman as no nonsense.
Right. Yes.
Oh, I thought of a thing I liked.
Okay.
When she fights Mr. Yakuza and he talks about how he was trained by one who studied with the great Lady Shiva, and Catwoman's all like, well, I study with Lady Shiva, and he's like, ah, shit. And then she just kicks his ass. That was great. That was a great moment. That was funny. Mm-hmm. It fit the tone of the film really well. That moment was a good moment.
I liked everything that Black Mask had to do. I thought Jonathan Banks has really inspired casting for that, and he's not just doing like his, you know, old laconic thing. He's kind of randy. Right. He's enjoying himself.
He's at a party in Spain, you know.
Yeah, and it worked. You know, interesting deep cut villains. Having a batwing lady was kind of, I don't know if that's going back to Gargoyles and he wanted to have a batwinged lady in there, but that was an interesting.
Yeah, at some point they all turned into demons, and I was like, what is happening? What's going on? That's when I started to lose interest, was when they all turned into demons. I was like, oh, man.
Also, like, I get that in the cat world, as a, you know, I mentioned before, I have some experience with the cats. Like, cheetahs are not the biggest, baddest cats around. I've always been confused why Cheetah was the cat choice for Minerva's transformation when, like, they're kind of slender. They often get their butt kicked by
lions. They have small heads.
Wild dogs. Yeah, they're an awesome animal, like the fastest land animal on Earth. Like, props to the cheetah. Long live the king. But, like, it just, they're not bruisers. Yeah, they're not brawly. They don't even roar. They purr like house cats do. You know, they're in like the small cat category, technically speaking. They're more closely related to like a mountain lion or a jaguarundi than they are an actual lion or jaguar. So, yeah.
I think it's what Paul said. They're sort of slender and
gracile.
The way they move is more interesting than, you know, it's sort of
Just not brawlers. They're not bruisers. Yeah,
that's fine. What I thought was interesting about this entire thing is that we didn't have a Catwoman hunted featurette on the last disc, and we didn't have a featurette on this one either. So I wonder if we're done with those after 40 movies. They had like little Catwoman documentaries, which I did not watch, so I don't know how old or well produced they were, but they didn't have a behind the scenes feature on the next film. And I looked back, and the Injustice didn't have one either.
On those previous ones, when they do the talking heads, can you tell, are they doing stuff like are they Zoom interviews?
And that very much could be it, Paul, because in the past they were all studio pieces, so it could be that they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't shoot them.
They didn't get everybody together, and they decided, we're not going to do something that looks, you know, all tacky, this guy talking from a studio apartment. And
that could very much be it.
With his kitchen in the background or whatever. They don't want to do that. So maybe...
I'm always excited for these movies. I'm always looking forward to watching them. You know, we saw the trailer. I wasn't super excited for this only because I'm not a big anime person. So when I saw the character designs and the animation, I was like, oh, no. But I went in hoping it would be interesting and new. And there were some parts of it that were unlike the other previous 43 films. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I thought the story suffered. I thought the characterizations were not great. The acting was over the top. I thought this missed a lot of things. And like I said, there were things that I appreciated about it. However, I don't think it was good.
I put off watching this because I'm consuming some media all based on my family recommendations, which is part of the irony. I'm reading Hail Mary because Josh recommended it, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm watching Preacher because you, Connor, recommended it. I'm really enjoying it. And I wanted to keep
Preacher.
Preacher, yes, sorry.
Not Preacher.
Reacher, not Preacher.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, I said Hail Mary. I went to a very Catholic place and said Preacher instead of Reacher. I'll reverse the order of those next time so I don't make that same mistake. But I've been enjoying Reacher, and so like I wanted to keep watching Reacher, and I wanted to keep reading Hail Mary, and I didn't want to watch this.
So this felt like homework to you?
No, because homework, I'd learn something, and I'd grow as a person. Yeah, that didn't happen with this.
This was a chore.
This was, yeah. Is this how you guys felt on that one Suicide Squad movie
Probably. Oh, man.
Thanks for reminding us. I would say the first ten might be too many because it's only 70 minutes. The first five minutes or so, well, this is kind of interesting and there's some fun things here. But by minute 50, I was like, okay, this is definitely not going to salvage anything. I don't know. It was a miss for me.
So for me, this is like middle of the pack because I thought there were interesting things about it, whereas there are several, I mean, there have been 44 of them. There are a lot of them that are just kind of samey or like, and a lot of the ones that are sort of like a lot of those like Batman and Son ones are just like, I know what to expect and I get that.
Oh, Paul, I agree with you. I was actually looking forward to doing the show because I thought this is going to be an interesting discussion as opposed to... And yet another Batman and Damian movie that we don't really like.
Like, yeah, what are we going to talk about?
The same voice actors, the same animation style. Like, there was a whole stretch in the, like a while ago where it was just like Justice League versus Teen Titans and Batman Bad Blood and Batman versus Robin. And it was all like the same movie four times. So at least this was different. And so when I finished, I was like, well, I didn't like that, but at least I'm looking forward to discussing why.
Yeah, I will always take different and doesn't quite hit the mark over same old, same old.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I like about this line is at least occasionally they take some chances and try some new things. And doesn't always work for me, but sometimes it works for other people. So we have our next installment, and we'll get to the ratings of this in a minute. Well, let's just do it now. What are the ratings? What do you guys rate this movie out of 5 stars ratings?
Out of five?
Yeah.
I like a 2.5, I guess.
Whoa.
Ratings. ratings.
I'm going to go 1.5.
No, I'm going full 1.
Okay.
Okay.
1 feels high. I feel like I'm being generous.
The next release is coming up, I think it's in May, and it's not a full-length feature. It is the next compilation of short films, which they always anchor around a sort of a main feature that's about half length. And this one's going to be Constantine, the House of Mystery, which is the sequel to Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. And I said that all out of I said it sounded like it was Justice League colon Dark Apocalypse War. Justice League Dark Apocalypse War was the movie that ended the shared Flashpoint universe. And this is a sequel to that film.
And I think that of the ones that are connected, was an interesting one.
I think we all like that one.
Yeah. It's not an all-time classic, I don't think. But like I thought it was fun and interesting and interesting character combinations. It's sort of, you know, what if the world ended, but these heroes continued. And it's got elements of let's get the band back together. It's got Damian getting together with Raven, only for that to get erased.
Right.
Because that at the end, that's the end of that time, or so we thought. The end of that timeline.
It looks like Constantine is paying the cosmic price for what he did to end that timeline. And it features the demon, and it features the Spectre, and Zatanna, and a bunch of other magic characters. So I'm excited for it. Matt Ryan is continuing his dominance over the character of Constantine, and he's playing the voice. And
he is Constantine now.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. We'll see if you guys get to watch all the other shorts that are in the collection.
It's always interesting to see how they handle that stuff. It goes back to like the Death in the Family, where if you rent it, you only get a certain version of it. If you got it on disc, you could do the choose your own adventure aspect. And so I'll be curious how they put that out.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll definitely at least be talking about Constantine for sure. But that one comes out in May. This show, obviously, several weeks after the release of Catwoman Hunted, it's just because there's a lot of things happening right now. So we had to stack a lot of special editions in a row. And this was the most flexible release schedule. So it fell back a few weeks. Hopefully in May, we'll be able to get that one out sooner after the release. And then I believe that the next film that was announced after that is a Green Lantern film.
Oh boy, my favorite.
And then at the end of the year is a Super Sons film.
Yes.
So that's when Paul's looking forward to.
That I'm looking forward to. I love those characters.
Battle of the Super Sons.
Into it.
Thing is though, Paul, we don't know which Green Lantern it is. There are so many of them.
If they could pick any of them but the one that I really don't like, that would be great. Because Green Lantern is such a weird thing for me, because on paper, I should love that property.
Mm-hmm.
I love cosmic stuff. I love Marvel cosmic.
Yep.
I love elements of DC cosmic. I love fourth world stuff.
Yep.
Hal Jordan is just not my dude.
Ryan, your favorite Green Lantern is who?
Ooh, great question. Oh, man. Honestly, never thought about it. Kilowog?
Kilowog's cool. He's an alien guy.
It's not a bad choice.
Might have to go Kilowog.
Connor, who's your favorite Green Lantern?
Obviously, it's Hal Jordan.
Okay, sure.
I grew up in the Bronze Age.
But Connor's kind of a con.
Okay.
So we'll have shows for Constantine in May, Green Lantern Beware My Power later in the year, and usually it's like late summers when they release these, and then Battle of the Super Sons, I believe as it was called, will be the end of the year. So we both look forward to.
You poosers.
So there you go. That was Catwoman Hunted.
Who was hunting her? What was the point of this movie?
Leviathan.
Leviathan.
Okay, Ryan didn't like it. That's the way it goes sometimes. We don't like
the distinct impression that I've been getting.
You can get back to watching Reacher after this. So in the meantime, you can listen to the iFanboy Pick of the Week show. That's where me and Josh and occasionally Ryan talk about the week's comics. We have many special edition shows. This past month, we've had shows on the Batman and our Booksplode and Talksplode shows, which is our interview and collected edition shows. We have our Media Splode show every month. Ryan hosts Science Sort Of, his science talk show. Paul, you're not doing anything, right, at the moment?
No, I'm not doing anything. I'm just hanging out.
Paul's hanging out. You can find him at... Please bring him trinkets.
No, please don't do that.
Mysteries and trinkets. He always accepts mysteries and
Paul
trinkets.
Paul Montgomery is hunted.
So, yeah, so there you go. So that's us. We'll be back next time for Constantine. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan, feeling hunted, persecuted, prosecuted, misjudged by all of you out there, probably mostly in the Discord. See you next time. Yeah, they call up.